Next case we'll call 19-8003 Millward versus Teton County Commissioners.
Your Honor, we are appealing a summary judgment dismissing 1983 claims against individual nurses of a medical corporation, Correct Care Solutions, and Teton County detention officers for failing in their gatekeeper roles. And also, we're appealing the dismissal of a supervisory liability against the sheriff of Teton County, as well as Monell claims against the county. And it's our position that the judge's factual and legal reasoning was flawed in that he invaded the province of the jury by weighing evidence and making credibility determinations. His first wrong turn was he ruled that the nurses made a reasonable, considered medical judgment about what the condition was of the deceased. To have a reasonable, considered medical judgment, you need a diagnosis. He showed up in a condition with astronomically high blood pressures, extremely high blood pressures, and they knew that these were life-threatening. And so the nurse, who's just a registered nurse, she's a gatekeeper. She knew this. She knew that extreme hypertension could cause organ failure.
Now, before you get too much into the facts, I'm wondering if you've properly stated the issue. The issue you said was whether she made a reasonable medical decision.
Yes.
The way I understand the test, it is whether she was, or any of them, were deliberately indifferent to the situation.
That to me is a
significantly different question. Sometimes it'll be the same answer, sometimes it won't. But I think we ought to make it clear that our test is whether there was deliberate indifference, whether she considered consequences, any of them considered consequences. You know, we really don't care.
And she was, when he showed up, she was on the phone. And the first thing to be, as a gatekeeper, she has to understand she is unqualified to make a diagnosis.
She should understand, or she knows she's unqualified. Sometimes this language is morphing into a negligence standard. And I just think we ought to be clear in our minds that we are not dealing with a negligence standard here. We are dealing with a standard of where she considered a risk and said, you know, I don't really care what happens.
Absolutely. And she was on notice of a condition and symptoms that could cause substantial harm, and she disregarded and recklessly disregarded finding somebody who is qualified to diagnose and treat this individual. Instead, she
wasn't the blood pressure coming down?
No, Your Honor.
I thought before he died, it came down significantly.
He was always in hypertensive crisis.
That wasn't my question. Wasn't it coming down? It wasn't her explanation. Because it was coming down, it looked like it was getting resolved.
It didn't come down over 50 hours. In fact, it skyrocketed up and stayed over 200 and 11, 264. It didn't come down until our experts say all his damage to his organs were done. This was 50-some hours later. She prescribed, and she's unauthorized to prescribe, medication, clonidine, which you're not supposed to give by her own company's policy. Elevated blood pressure, clonidine should not be used. She was unauthorized to prescribe. She prescribed it, and she prescribed the wrong medication. And so when we say, when the judge says, well, she treated him, she has no ability to treat him. Her job is to recognize the conditions and symptoms of a medical emergency, two medical emergencies, in fact. He was over 0.3, which under CCS's policy and procedure is a medical emergency and needs hospitalization. So two medical emergencies that she's unqualified to diagnose and treat, and she never contacts a physician or...
Did you bring a state law negligence or a professional malpractice claim against the nurses?
I'm sorry?
Did you bring a state law negligence or professional malpractice claim against the nurses?
Yes, we did, Your Honor. Okay. But keep in mind that's has limitations under the state law of Wyoming. But so the treatment, she is deliberately indifferent because she recklessly disregards, and I direct this court to your cases in Mata versus Saiz, in Sealock versus Colorado, where the gatekeepers recognize the conditions and symptoms of medical emergencies, and they get a physician. There was no reasoned medical judgment because no physician was ever contacted. Then they say, the nurses, they both say, I cannot diagnose. The other nurse says, I don't do medical exams. She didn't even go see him in over 50 hours. So he's never seen by a qualified person, physician, nurse practitioner, who, by the way, a medical nurse practitioner, Your Honor, was on call for CCS, her own company, in Jackson, Wyoming. She's a medical nurse practitioner who, if on call, she didn't call her, she disregarded calling her. We've taken her deposition. She said, boy, I'd never seen blood pressures that high. That could cause all sorts of organ failure. I would have immediately referred her to the hospital, and they would have taken tests and dealt with it. So when we talk about deliberate indifference, Judge Ebel, she disregarded any of the reasonable options available to her.
Do you view your case against the nurses as being stronger than your case against the guards for deliberate indifference?
They blame each other. There was a contract, Your Honor, that CCS only contracted to provide the nurse for some 20 hours a week. That means for 144 hours a week, you had to have the detention officers. CCS was supposed to train the detention officers on how to obtain vitals, take blood pressures, make clinical judgments. They had to make clinical judgments on all of these nausea, tremors, agitation, anxiety, blood pressure, temperature, pulse. 49 omissions they didn't take. So
I'm just trying to drill down. I mean, your claims against the two types of defendants are a little different. The nurses, you're saying they should have known they couldn't handle it, and even though they tried to treat him and because they did prescribe medication to him, so even though they tried to treat him and they had reasons for thinking he was okay that they articulated, you have the guards on the other hand. Where the guards, your allegation is that the guards were not giving them the prescribed medication and, in fact, avoiding his cell.
Yes.
And that's what I want you to drill down on, to see if there's some difference in the two, in the claims against the two types of defendants.
Honestly, Your Honor, both are equally culpable. CCS didn't give the nurses, they disciplined the nurses for working overtime. The nurses said, well, we're trying to train the officers, and we don't have enough time. CCS disciplines the nurses for working overtime. The officers are saying, well, we're not getting trained. We have all these jobs. So it is an equally culpable situation because It's a systemic failure. It's not the fault purely of the individual officers, and it's not purely the fault of the nurses, although in this case, the nurse clearly was deliberately indifferent to known risks of harm. I mean, they'd never seen blood pressures this high before. And they're trained.
Well, you don't have that from her, do you? That's from the nurse practitioner.
No, we have that from
the nurse that was on the phone.
The nurse on the phone said she can't diagnose. I don't do diagnoses. She's the only one that saw him over 50 hours. They have a medical nurse practitioner that was never called.
No, I understand that. But what you said was that she said she'd never seen a blood pressure that high before.
That was the nurse practitioner, yes,
okay.
So now we have, when you say there was prescribed medications, but the clonidine was the wrong prescription because under CCS's own policy, it masked all these vitals that the officers were supposed to be seeing.
But doesn't that just sound in bad judgment as opposed to deliberate indifference? I mean, she was trying to do something, whether it was the right thing, whether it was the right decision. I mean, it's not like she was just like our Al Turkey case where they were just watching a man die before their eyes, right?
She knows she can't diagnose. She knows that. And yet she only saw him twice for moments over 50 hours. It's unconscionable. Our nurse expert said that this individual wasn't referred to a hospital or brought in a nurse practitioner or physician brought in to see him. She completely recklessly disregarded known risks, Your Honor. It's deliberate indifference.
Hours, when within that 50-hour period did his blood pressure start to decline? At what hour? What hour was the test taken that showed a decline?
It would have been an hour. All the blood pressures were to be taken in 8-hour increments. The first blood pressure was 197 over 141. Hypertensive crisis. Medical emergency.
Just answer my question.
11 hours later, the next one. 20 hours later, the next one.
When was the first decline noticed?
The last one was taken 1 hour after the 211 over 131. And it went down to 174 over 120, but Your Honor, that's...
Was that the first one showing a decline?
That was the first
Did
one
every
showing...
Every other one show ascending pressures. When was the first one that showed a decline?
The third was taken 11, 20, 31 hours into his hospitalization, when probably our experts say his heart's been already damaged,
was the first one that was
reduced to 211 over 131.
That was 31 hours into the confinement was the first pressure that showed a decline.
Yes.
Okay, that's just all I wanted to know. Thank you. That answers it.
There was no, if the court wants an example of the Tenth Circuit's application of considered medical judgment, I submit Self versus Crum shows that. The nurses saw fever, chills, aches, coughs, shortness of breath, swelling. They referred this detainee to a doctor, and the doctor made a diagnosis. And it was arguable it was a misdiagnosis. That was the judgment. He made a misdiagnosis. Here, there was no diagnosis. This man died 55 hours
later. That's not exactly right, is it? They thought that they did believe they knew what was wrong with him, and they thought that he was acting consistently with alcohol withdrawal. Isn't that right?
No,
there's no evidence of that in the record.
There isn't, but there's evidence. The judge made a credibility decision in invading the jury. The nurses are saying we thought he was improving. At that same time, we have an inmate who's put into a cell where he has someone who's been arrested 50 times. He's psychotic, yelling, screaming. They violate their own policy by not segregating him out. The officers and the nurses don't want any part of that, so they don't even go in there. And he's got, the inmate, Ainer, says he's suffering, he's asking for medication. He's got shortness of breath, he's sweating, he's sick, he won't eat. So the judge makes a credibility decision on what was his condition. These are genuine issues of material fact, Your Honor,
okay,
that a jury should
see. You're out of time, counsel. Thank you.
May it please the court,
counsel.
Before I begin, I want to notify the court that I will be splitting the time with the other co-defendants equally. So I want to use my 5 minutes to explain precisely why the sheriff and the deputies were not deliberately indifferent to Mr. Millward's condition here. And specifically, I would like to point about what they knew at the time of the booking. They knew from the arresting patrol trooper that he was coherent, that he could talk, that he was functional. They knew that he had a high BAC, and they knew that he had a high blood pressure. So they contacted the nurse to ask about how to proceed, and the nurse advised them to keep him in the jail and provide medication. And when they asked him about the high blood pressure, Mr. Millward even reported functioning with that condition. I think that the high blood pressure alone is simply not enough to show deliberate indifference to a heart attack of any kind.
But you certainly couldn't propose that as a per se rule, that high blood pressure is not enough to trigger responsibility. Of course, it could be enough, depending on the facts.
It might be depending on the facts, but I would point the court to case law, such as Fort versus Faulkner County. And this is a case where the Eighth Circuit specifically found that high blood pressure readings do not indicate a medical condition so obvious that even a layperson would easily recognize the necessity.
Well, each case is going to have to be done on its own facts, but that was the Eighth Circuit. I haven't read the case, but I can't imagine saying that high blood pressure could never be enough. I guess we just proceed.
That's fair, but I would also point out that that case was even stronger facts in the sense that he was complaining about the high blood pressure, and here we don't have anything in the record showing that he was complaining to the deputies that he had chest pains.
Doesn't the record actually show the opposite in this case?
It shows that they knew that he was pale, and even if you take Mr. Ainer's testimony, the cellmate, he said that he had trouble eating, that he had he was shaking. But these are all symptoms consistent with alcohol withdrawal, not necessarily anything related to high blood pressure by itself, especially to a layperson, nor that a heart attack was imminent to these untrained deputies, these lay deputies. And I would also point out that even Mr. Ainer's testimony, if you take it completely as true, it says that he didn't feel good to the deputies, not, again, that he was clutching his chest, not even that they saw him shivering or having trouble eating. And in sum, I think that whatever symptoms existed could be attributable to the alcohol withdrawal very fairly by a layperson. And this case, I think, is very similar to another Tenth Circuit case called Martinez versus Beggs. And the court here framed it as a question of whether they were aware of a substantial risk of a heart attack, not necessarily of harm by itself. And I think that the same reasoning is applicable here. Whether the deputies were aware of a substantial risk of a heart attack in this case.
Did he make any complaints about chest pain or any other type of symptom that would have given the deputies facts to where they could have known he might be having a heart attack?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And to be fair, I'm not a medical professional, and I think that it would be, but to me, it seems that a lot of those symptoms that they did know about, according to their testimony, or perhaps could have been known about, could have been very fairly attributable to the alcohol withdrawal. And I think that that's pretty clear.
Was the fact that he was a diabetic known by to the nurses, or was that put in his file somehow?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I can check that up and provide further briefing on that point, but I don't know.
No,
off the top
if you
of my
don't
head.
Know, we'll figure it out.
Okay. Well, what did they do? In other words, you're saying, well, it does their conduct, but what did they do?
So upon booking, they immediately contacted the nurse who told him to book him into the jail.
Does that save him from an argument of deliberate indifference? Just that one fact?
In this case, I think so, only because...
Okay, then what else did they do?
They put him on medication regime. Immediately, there were some inconsistencies, but he was examined by a nurse twice, and they would check up on him periodically.
Why? I mean, if they weren't concerned that this man's medical condition, there was a severe problem, why did they bother to even contact a nurse?
Because they knew from the symptoms that they had to contact the nurse, not necessarily as far as to know that he would die of a heart attack at that point. And I apologize, but my time is up, so thank you.
Okay. Wait a minute. Oh, come back here.
You don't necessarily get to dodge out until you've answered the question.
That's right.
My apologies.
One of the dangers of splitting time.
Yeah. So you're saying that at least they knew something was wrong enough to call the nurse.
Yes.
But you acknowledge that that's not necessarily sufficient to relieve them from any deliberate indifference.
I think that in this case it is, based on the symptoms and the facts
here. But that's not all
that
they knew. That's not all that they did. I'm asking you, what did they do? You're saying, well, they didn't do this, they didn't do that, they weren't... What did they do? Because there can also be a negative aspect of this by recognizing... either an emergency or a condition that you don't pay enough attention to. So what did they do?
So they would take vital signs. That's pretty established in the record. The record does reflect that sometimes they were missed, but they did take vital signs. They would check up on him, either by looking through the window of the cell itself, as made evident by video record.
Now, when they checked his vital signs, did they understand that blood pressure in the area of which that was showing that he had, that was dangerous?
That's a complicated question, only because I think...
It's a good question.
It is.
Did they recognize that whenever blood pressure is running 170 or 200 and something over something, that is a dangerous condition?
I would refer the court to Deputy Moyer's testimony, where he talks about speculative risks of high blood pressure. Not that Mr. Miller was an imminent risk of death, not that he was going to die in the next 2 days, not even that he necessarily needed to go to the hospital, but they needed to contact a nurse earlier on. They relied on the reasonable medical judgment of prison medical staff, and I think that's what the symptoms, at least to them, required them to do. Thank you.
Thanks, counsel.
May it please the court, Jake Goldstein on behalf of CCS and Nurse Davis and Nurse Cortum.
You're on behalf of who?
CCS, Nurse Cortum, and Nurse Davis.
Okay, thank you.
And I'd like to go directly to Judge Ebel's questions, because I think it is important to point out when the treatment started to begin to take effect and improve his condition. The facts that are relevant to that are that when Mr. Millward did arrive to the jail, he refused the drugs that were offered to him that were specifically designed to lower his blood pressure. It was not until the next morning that Nurse Cordham told him that if you do not take these pills that I am recommending you take, you will die. He then acquiesced and took those pills at that time. Over the course of that next 24 hours, that is when the blood pressure began to come down, and by the next morning, his blood pressure was down to 211, 131, and then even an hour later, it was down again to 174 over 120.
Was there evidence that high blood pressure is a symptom of intoxication or not?
There is, and that was what the nurses, what they had believed what was going on was that this was a gentleman who was going through alcohol withdrawal. And that the
so there was medical evidence by the nurses that high blood pressure was symptomatic of coming down from alcoholism.
That is correct. And that is why Nurse Cordham, when she receives the call on that first night, recommends instituting Nurse Davis's, who has prescriptive authority, her standing order of treating the inmate with, or the pretrial detainee with clonidine, which is specifically designed to treat symptoms of alcohol withdrawal, and in particular, hypertension. So I did want to begin my argument with discussing the qualified immunity issue, but regardless of how the court decides that issue, summary judgment can still be affirmed for all the reasons I just stated about that were relevant to the deliberate indifference question, because there really was no evidence that supports plaintiff's assertion that the nurses were deliberately indifferent to his medical condition, either at the time he arrived at the jail or at any time following while he was still there.
You're talking about the question about, you said you were going to start out with the question about whether qualified immunity, is that the question of whether it even applies to your clients?
That's correct.
Okay.
And we would submit that it does. And the reason why we believe that it does is there doesn't appear to be any dispute between the parties that that it is available to private parties under the right circumstances. Those circumstances, we believe, are present here.
Well, let me make sure that, because you've got two issues going along on that. One, as I recall, the district court said that it was clear, I mean, that it was clearly established, but he held that your client had not violated any constitutional right. And there are those two questions?
That is
correct. I'm wondering why the district court even discussed clearly established if he's going to say there's a violation, it was not a violation.
Well, I think the judge was recognizing that this is an issue of first impression before this court. And that perhaps the judge was...
But you're saying that, as I understand, there's an appeal that the trial court erred in saying that it was clearly established. And is that your argument that's being made in regards to that?
That the trial court erred in finding that it was clearly established?
Yes.
No, I that is not part of my argument.
Okay.
So my argument is that the trial court correctly found that
They were entitled to
qualified immunity.
Okay. Excuse the interruption.
Right. And that the reason for that is the facts in this case, we believe, under the Richardson factors, strongly support the extension of qualified immunity to these nurses. And in particular, I'd focus on the market forces factor, because that, under Richardson, is the most important factor. And here, those market forces that were present in Richardson were simply not present here. You know, Richardson, you have a privately run, privately operated jail staffed with private actors following their own policies and under little to no direct supervision from the state and in competition with other firms who would love to have
contract. Counsel, I think we're probably familiar with those cases. My question to you, assuming that they are entitled to qualified immunity, the defense of qualified immunity, then how did they not deliberately and differently affect the death of the plaintiff in this case? I'm saying let's assume
Absolutely.
That they're entitled to it. So
Absolutely.
Now you got to answer the question, well, their conduct didn't rise to that standard. So.
Absolutely, and it did not here. And I would point the court to the facts that at each instance where the nurses were contacted about Mr. Millward, they did address his known medical conditions. They prescribed him on that first night, learning that he came in high blood pressure with high blood alcohol level. They prescribed him medication that was designed to treat those very conditions.
But they recognized when they took those first readings that this man had an extreme high blood pressure, right? It doesn't matter whether it's alcohol related. They recognized the man because he was in trouble at the hospital, wasn't he?
They recognized that he had high blood pressure, and they also recognized that this was his baseline, that this was a gentleman who reported to them that he had a history of high blood pressure, that he had a history of diabetes, that he had those histories and was refusing treatment for those conditions. And in fact, he continued to refuse it until the following morning. I'd like to leave my colleague some time.
That's fine. Let's add one. Let's add another minute. You can be excused. We'll have your colleague come up. And
thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah.
My name is John Bowers. I represent Teton County and the officers. And I, Your Honor, if I may answer your question about what did the detention officers do, 11:30 at night, little Christine Sanders got the nurse on the phone and said, this man has diabetes. He has a high BAC. I'm worried about it. What should I do? And they continued to do that. Michael Fieldy, he made a mistake one day. He only gave half the Librium. He waited. As soon as he found Nurse Cordham, he said, hey, I made a mistake. What do we do? As you pointed out, that's a big difference between negligence and deliberate indifference. In fact, I would just refer the court to the Maui case, I think on page 54 of the plaintiff's brief, where that court said they held that they didn't these untrained people that weren't even officers that were screening, they said even in that situation, we're not going to make municipalities and government agencies screen for every possible illness. And they talked about things like hypertension and things like that.
This wasn't screening for any possible illness. This was an illness screaming in their face. This wasn't possible illness. This was an actual illness of extreme nature.
So any case
you're trying to cite to us about not needing to screen for any possible illness, that just doesn't seem to have any relevance to the issue in this case at all.
Well, I think, Your Honor, if I may just... I think it does in that he didn't die from alcohol withdrawal. He died from a 99% occlusion of his left descending coronary artery. And nowhere. He didn't complain about chest pains. In fact, he didn't complain about anything. He was very cooperative. He was talking. He was mobile. There was nothing to put our officers on notice. And as a gatekeeper, the notice they had that first night, they got a hold of the medical professional that was trained in correctional care to take care of him. They did everything a reasonable gatekeeper would do. Your Honor, I am thankful for the extra minute, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you, counsel. The case will be submitted, and counsel are excused.